D-Mace Finkin and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finkin, and back from his, correct me if I'm wrong here, Italian vacation. Mitch Light of The Athletic joins us to discuss college football. It was Italy, right, Mitch?
Let's go with the European vacation.
Okay.
It was Madrid, Barcelona, and Florence. I'm very cultured now.
Love Florence. Love wow. Florence.
Move over, Florence. Move over, Griswold. The lights are going on the European
vacation. What'd you say,
vacation.
Mitch?
Florence is incredible.
Oh, I love Florence. Oh, I love Florence.
So what you're saying is you left the country, had the time of your life, and Vanderbilt defeated a top five team for the first time in program history. I don't think that's a coincidence.
So would you take that trip back to be here at the stadium?
Never come back to the country. You know, just stay where you are.
You'll get another wave if they somehow fall to Ball State. You will be sent back.
Exactly.
No, I've heard this before. I was home Saturday night for the Kentucky game, so it's not just my European vacation, but it is just not the Vanderbilt game, but it is surreal being in Europe when like the 11 a.m. games kick off at 6 p.m. like. And, you know, the Vanderbilt game ended at 2:30 in the morning, local time there. So it's next time I'm going to Europe, it's not going to be during the football season, put it that way.
So, Mitch, Alabama, the Vanderbilt defeats Alabama. They follow it up with a win against Kentucky on the road last week. They are on the edge of the top 25. They were the team that received the others receiving votes, that section. They received the most votes of a team that did not make the top 25 this past week. What, when you look at those two games together, what has most impressed you about Vanderbilt's performance over the past 2 weeks?
A lot. Nothing fluky about either game. Whatever cliche you want to use, just doing the little things that you need to do to win the games. I mean, they've not had a three and out on offense since the fourth quarter of the Missouri game. They have scored for the season. They've scored 24 times on 24 trips inside the red zone. And the real key there is touchdowns. 19 touchdowns on 25 trips inside the red zone. That's 76%. They've only turned the ball over twice. Clark Lee talks about it. They're playing the way they think they need to play to win the game. It's controlling the ball, limiting possessions, and not turning it over, not giving the other team big plays, not giving the other team short field. So, you can look at those box scores, and especially the Alabama game. Alabama averaged, 8 yards a play and say, you know, how did Vanderbilt win the game? But when you only have six possessions, or whatever, Alabama had X amount of possessions, and they didn't have any short fields, that's how Vanderbilt won the game. So I think that's probably the most impressive part, that they're just sticking to their formula, and there's nothing fluky about it. Now, if they played Alabama 10 times in Nashville, would they beat them five? I don't think so, but I think they might beat them more than once, and you know, that's probably not something we expected to say.
So imagine for a moment, it's back in the day. You've got a television with rabbit ears, none of this multi-view stuff that I can't handle where you can watch four games at one time. I've never really enjoyed that, but this is not about me. This is about you. My point is that you have the opportunity to watch one game and one game only. Are you watching Alabama and Tennessee or Georgia and Texas this weekend?
Georgia and Texas. I enjoy the history of the Alabama-Tennessee rivalry. I grew up, I still am, but I grew up the son of an Alabama alum. So I grew up in New Jersey as a huge Alabama fan. And
I'm sure there were many of you in New Jersey, a lot of Alabama fans in New Jersey.
There were not many of us. Although I went to an Alabama at Temple game in Philadelphia when I was in high school. And I think 36,000 of the 37,000 fans there were Alabama fans. I enjoy that rivalry and I enjoy the intrigue of the game. But I think Georgia, Texas, the fact that you've got the number one team in the country and another top five team and what we think could be a preview of the conference championship game, and the fact that it's a new game. I mean, these teams have played in bowl games before, but that's where we would talk about realignment. We might not like realignment and all this stuff, but we enjoy when we get the Ohio State-Oregon game. We enjoy it when we get the Texas-Georgia game. So I'm really looking forward to watching that one.
Talk with Mitch Light of The Athletic, discussing college football, SEC, all over. Mitch, quickly before I get into the SEC, back into the SEC, the Heisman Trophy race. Obviously, you know, you got a few guys. Hunter's down.
Yeah.
Don't know if he's going to play this game or not. Didn't play last game or play portions of it, so that may hurt his chances at winning a Heisman. Shedeur Sanders, he didn't play a great game. It wasn't a bad game either. So is this a two-player race between Ashton Gentry, Genty and Dylan Gabriel?
Too early. I think, you know, in our this Heisman straw poll on the Athletics website, which is run magnificently by Joe Rexroad, by the way. He collects all the data. I make the pretty charts, but he collects the data. So
Joe still doesn't know how to take a screenshot in 2024, let alone do anything with tables and charts and stuff.
I was torn this week because I had Hunter in previous weeks. I went with Genty number one this week, Hunter number two, and it looks like he's playing this week. And then I went Cam Ward three. That was really Gabriel's first big performance of the season. He's been good, hasn't been great, but obviously did it on a big stage. I still think Jalen Milroe will have an opportunity to put up big games there. The thing about Genty, he has to keep dominating, which he's doing. But when you play at Boise State or, you know, Group of Five school, you can't afford to have, like, 13 carries for 42 yards against Utah State or something like that. He needs to keep it up, which I think he will. His numbers are incredible. So it's going to be an interesting race because of the fact that we've got a Group of Five guy who everyone's rallying around. Usually it takes longer in the season for people to realize and jump on the bandwagon, but I think everyone's on the Ashton Gentry bandwagon by now.
Yeah, that kid's good, man. And I don't even think he played a full game yet. And he's on pace for well over 2,000 yards this season. Mitch, I asked Willie this question. Well, I asked Willie and Adam this question in regards to the whole realignment and the Pac-12 now being the Pac whatever it is.
Yeah.
Do you think in maybe down the line here some years, some of these teams, and I know why they did the move, because of money. I get it. I understand it. But do you think some of these teams may regret leaving the conferences they're in? Because the way I look at it now is you're just going to beat each other up whether it be the SEC, the Big Ten, or the ACC, or the Big 12. You're going to beat each other up. And some of these teams that left the Pac-12 thought, okay, we're going to the Big Ten, we're going to the SEC, we should get it. As long as we win, as long as we don't lose no more than a game or two, then we're good. Maybe they should have rethought that because it would have been easier for them to get into the college football playoffs had they stayed in the Pac-12.
Yeah, one school that comes to mind is UCLA.
Yes.
I mean, they've had their issues in the past few years anyway, and not like they were competing for Pac-12 titles.
And I look at USC as well.
Yeah, but specifically UCLA, I have a hard time seeing UCLA being a college football caliber playoff team from in the Big Ten in the next decade. You make a valid point there, Derek, but no school was really acting. They were all acting out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
They all went because they thought they had to. Almost every realignment move we've seen, whether it's Arizona, Arizona State, those schools wanted to stay in the Pac-12. They all wanted the Pac-12 to exist as it was, but it wasn't. So everyone made their moves because they had to and didn't want to be left behind. There cannot be anyone on the UCLA campus or the USC campus who really thought they'd rather be in the Big Ten than the Pac-12. And you're right. The number, just look at the – I'm looking at the standings right now. When you got 16 teams in a league, it's just – it's a lot harder to finish in the top two or three of a 16-team league than a 10 or 12-team league. But that's the world we live in right now. And these schools have kind of made their bed. Now they got to exist in them.
I do wonder, like 20 years, well – It'd be different. Will it cycle back at all to regional, geographical stuff like it used to be, or will it stay and get even crazier than it is right now? Well, one thing, Mitch, that does look apparent with the NIL dynamic here, this new world, is that it does seem like it's narrowed the gap between the top teams, the top five or six that would be in the playoff contention, and then the next 15 to 30, I think you could probably say. Would you agree with that? Like, I didn't think this would be the case. I thought the rich would only get richer and there would be more separation. but I feel like it's moved more towards parity.
Yeah, it's. I agree with what you're saying. I will caution that we don't. We're still so early in this cycle, or whatever we want to call it, like 1 year, 2 years. I don't know if that's going to be like in 5 years. We need to look, and maybe in the year 2027, there's three dominant teams, and there's a huge gap. But to your point, I think everyone kind of agrees, and I've heard a lot of people say it this way: the bad teams are better, and the elite teams aren't as good. And there's a lot of different ways to look at it. Kirby Smart complained, because coaches complain about everything, in the offseason, and everyone kind of rolled our eyes at him. He's like, we don't have the depth that we used to have, you know, because kids want to play. So the Georgia twos are playing at Kentucky now as the ones and all over. So those teams don't have as much depth. I still think the elite teams have the ability to plug some holes at a left tackle or a linebacker and really make what would have been a weakness into a strength. So I think that's how the elite teams are using the portal in cases. But I think overall, these top teams don't have the depth. And when you get into this point of the season, you have injuries and stuff. We're seeing that play come to fruition. But I totally agree. We're just not – it just doesn't seem like we have those elite teams that we did several years ago.
All right, so let's look at the two huge SEC games here. First, I've watched the last three Alabama games because everybody watched Georgia-Alabama.
Yeah.
I obviously watched Alabama play Vanderbilt, and then I happened to Detroit.
Who won that game? I was out of the country.
The Commodores.
Okay, thanks.
They were able to beat Alabama. Isn't that interesting? Like, okay. The person that goes away for like, wait a minute, what? I came back to Vanderbilt to beat Alabama? What?
Yeah.
But and then I watched a lot of their game because it was an early game. I was in Detroit getting ready for the Preds game. That was the game that was on. And Alabama was very fortunate to win. They were fighting uphill from the start, even though they were in the lead. It never felt good, and they had that very uneasy feeling in the crowd. Are you surprised they're favored at Tennessee by 3 right now?
A little bit. I would have said pick them. I mean, a lot of the betting is the lines are bet to, you know, equal money on both sides, so there's still that Alabama, you know, like in the NFL, the Cowboys are probably favored more often than they should be because they're the Cowboys. Alabama still has that national brand, but Tennessee's got its issues, obviously, which we can get to. They're struggling. But totally with you, the Alabama game was an entertaining game the other day. And you just, they're up 14-0 first half, and they look like they're going to put them away, and then they have the turnover, and then the busted coverage, and then game on. And you just, it was kind of a strange game. There's just a lot of things that don't appear to be going well with this Alabama team since that first half of that Georgia game. So to answer your question specifically, I probably would have thought this would be more of a pick 'em.
So what's the key matchup in your mind? Because Alabama's defense specifically, to me, looks like they really struggle in the areas where they're usually so strong. They just that physicality, that domination, they just don't seem to be showing that at all.
Yeah, they're not getting off the field very well. You know, obviously, the third down, what was it, 13 of 18 or whatever Vanderbilt did. They are – I just was looking at some stats earlier. They have been – they've been on the field for an average of 74 plays per game in the SEC. That's the most. Now, I don't know how much that matters. It matters to a degree, but they're just allowing too many third down conversions. In SEC games, it's 47% third down. You'd never see that in the Nick Saban era or in previous 10, 15 years with Alabama. But then you look at a Tennessee team that has had trouble sustaining drives. I mean, they've been going 3 and out far too often. They're not getting the big strike. You know, just think 2 years ago, how often, you know, you'd be watching a game and Tennessee average scoring drive, 47 seconds. They're not getting those big plays. And when you're not getting those big plays, that means you got to march the ball down the field, and they're not doing that. They have had far too many 3 and outs. So it's sort of like you get an offense that's struggling to sustain drives against a team that is struggling to get the other team off the field. So I'm just fascinated what happens with this game. I mean, I don't think Alabama lost to Vanderbilt because of Jalen Milroe. I think he's been playing fine. He wasn't great against South Carolina, and now there's a lot of eyes on Nico. He's clearly not playing very well. So this is a game where 3 weeks ago we were like, wow, this is going to be one of the games of the year. We were saying it's going to be a top five matchup. And the winner, you know, the loser is fine for the playoff, all that. It's sort of an elimination game now, so there's just a ton of intrigue in Knoxville with this one.
So what about Georgia? Is this an elimination game for Georgia at Texas with them already having a loss?
I don't think so. I mean, I think I'm looking at the schedule right now, but one thing that's hurt is going to hurt Georgia, I think, if they lose this game, is the fact that I thought Georgia played at Ole Miss this year. Yeah, they do. Okay. There's the fact that Ole Miss has lost a couple games because, you know, before we were looking at schedules before the year, and you're like, they play at Alabama, they play at Texas, and at Ole Miss. So this is a team that can afford some losses with that brutal schedule. But if you lose to at Alabama and you lose to Texas, where are your quality wins coming from? That Clemson game is going to have a better shelf life than we thought. And, you know, they still play Tennessee at home. But I think they can lose this game and still make the college football playoff with two losses. But they've got to play better. You know, basically, you know, look at their resume. Since the first half of the Clemson game, they didn't play great against Kentucky. They had an awful first half against Alabama. They did – Auburn game was fine, but they – let Mississippi State hang around. They gave up 31 points in that game. So there's a lot of questions about this team, too.
Mitch Light from The Athletic. Mitch, I'm glad that despite that you're very cultured because of your wonderful vacation, you're not too cultured to still talk to us every week, and we appreciate that.
Never. I always enjoy it, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Mitch. We're not too lowbrow for Mitch Light.
He probably wasn't thinking about us very much while he was in Florence, though.
Don't sell yourself. You shouldn't have been. Don't sell yourself short. You don't think that when he found out that Vanderbilt won, he was like, "I wonder what Willie would say right now."
I can't wait to talk to Adam Willie Deep. Like, he was probably thinking, "I should call them from Florence and just do the show."
That's what FaceTime audio is for. Yes. I've made the mistake of making calls from out of the country. My phone bill did not appreciate it. 615-737-1025. Coming up next. We've talked a lot about the Titans' defense this season, how it grades. You know, a lot of this is where the numbers and the eye test tell some different stories. And the defense is going to get, in my opinion, its first real test of the season this weekend. We'll break that down next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vinken, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.